Blog Talk Radio.
My calculations are correct. When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious sh-
Start in a second.
There's a trailer. Okay.
Well, maybe we'll run in a second. What's going on, everybody? I started off bad as usual. It's even worse today because I'm 10 minutes ago. I always figure 10 minutes ago this soul crushing headache started and I can barely think straight. So we know how well I think to start with. So this should be good.
are you okay? Do you want to? Are you okay to do this? You're good. Okay.
The show must go on, as they say.
All right. Cool. All right. Well, we'll try to keep it fast then, so you don't keel over or anything like that. I don't even see the Twilight thing on our studio, so I'm not sure if it's there.
It's at the very bottom. This is probably not for right now, but there's a big space when they put these trailers out for some reason, and I usually take it out. I forgot this time, so
okay.
There you go. That's it.
Well, anyway, this week's show, we're going to be talking about the finale to the Twilight Saga, Breaking Dawn Part 2. Yes, I know, Twihards, it's coming to an end. Actually, most of you have probably already seen it, so it's over for you. So we're definitely going to be talking about that one. And I've got a lot to say about this one, to be honest. And I've seen your comments on Facebook, so I think you do too. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to go ahead and call an audible on this one and say that this is going to be spoiler.
Thank you.
I think. I'm not going to bother trying to tiptoe around the film this time. Sometimes we do. I'm not going to bother this time. One, because I don't care as much about Twilight as I do other movies, so I don't care if I spoil something, and I'll probably do it by accident, because I don't have the same level of care about this franchise, so I'll probably do it by accident anyway. So
well, you usually stop me from
spoilers in this one, right? Right.
You usually stop me from spoiling, but I actually meant to call you earlier, like, can we please spoil this? Because
I usually only stop you because we don't always say whether or not we're going to spoil. If we make an announcement one way or the other, then I probably we'll probably just let it go.
Right.
When we don't say anything, I don't want to surprise people and suddenly spoil some shit. So, but in this case, we're letting you know ahead of time. We'll probably be talking pretty freely about this one. So there you go. We're also going to be talking about Silver Linings Playbook, the new film from David O. Russell that's getting a lot of Oscar buzz for Bradley Cooper and Jennifer Lawrence. And also briefly, Anna Karenina. I really don't want to spend a whole lot of time talking about Anna Karenina. It's a book I hated in school. I hate it now. So I don't want to talk too much about it all that much. So we'll keep that one short. But, how's that clip from Twilight going for you?
It'll be ready in a second. It's all set. It's just uploading now, but, yeah, the thing about Twilight, and we'll get into this more later. For anybody that's freaking out about the spoilers, it's impossible to talk about review this film without spoiling it. Especially considering, I'm sure everybody's seen what I saw on Facebook. Our good friend Kevin, who is usually excited about these movies, was talking left and right about how he wanted to see the audience reaction. And in all fairness, a lot of people saying are the same thing, the audience reaction. It really doesn't say anything about the spoiler itself. But
yeah, I'm curious to know what it is that he wanted to see, especially about the audience reaction. One, because the audience reaction is going to be the same as it was for all the other ones. I mean, regardless of any changes that were made from the book, and there is a pretty significant change made from the book at the end, regardless of that, I think the Twilight fans are so hardcore that they'll be able to forgive it and recognize it for what it was. And the fact remains that the reason it was changed is because it's better cinematically than the book's conclusion would have been. So, I mean, so I think that they're going to love it regardless. And if they didn't, I think what happens during the final credits will probably make up for it. So, I don't know what it is that he really wants to see, unless it's the violence that he wants to hear their reaction to that. Now, that I found interesting, because the reaction to it in the screening I was at was interesting, but not, like, more people weren't freaking out in their fucking seats over it.
Right.
So, I don't know. I don't know what he's excited about in regards to that. But,
let's just say screw the clip, because I didn't even check it for words, so it could just be all songs. Let's just go right into Breaking Dawn. So we catch up. Obviously, this is part two of the two-part finale from the book. And when we get to that part, if you read the book, I didn't. And I was looking up online to see what the differences were. I couldn't find anything clear cut, so you have to tell me about that. But we got Edward and Jacob and Bella picking up right where the last movie left off. Basically, they have Bella just had a kid. They're married. They're wondering what the consequences are going to be of this child, since it was born before Bella turned into a vampire, and they're also dealing with Bella's newfound vampire-ness. And they don't know what's going to happen. The kid's growing at an incredible rate. But to mix it all up, the Voltaire... who have been like the overlords of the entire series. Everybody should know them.
Yeah.
It's causing a cataclysmic possible scenario for the Cullen clan and a lot of other clans across the world, because there is apparently a big rule against immortal children, because vampire kid can't be trained the way another one would, and they had problems back in the day with them going wild and killing entire villages. There's a pretty neat little flashback sequence. So basically, it all rolls down to a final war or standoff, I should say, between the Cullens and their compatriots and the Voltaire, who really seem to really just want to fight regardless of what happens. And that's basically it in a nutshell. You also have dealing with the extreme creepiness of Jacob imprinting, or God, I wish there was a less creepy way to say that, on their kid.
Yeah, there really isn't. And no matter how hard they tried to explain it away, it still seemed creepy.
Yeah,
it just wasn't going to sound good. No matter how they played that up.
Yeah.
The movie is funny to me because, like all the other Twilight movies, this one is ridiculously bad at some points. And I'm going to go come right out and say that I think this is the best out of the entire franchise. Now, that is a low bar. Granted, it's a low bar. But I do feel like this one had enough of a story to it that the other ones lacked, that it made this one watchable to me. My major complaint, and I pretty much say this every time a Twilight movie comes out, is that I never feel like there's any real conflict, and it never really is. A lot of it is just teen angst, and that's really about the crux of all of it. Like, that's all there is to it, is teen angst. And they keep teasing us with this idea of conflict that never really pans out. And we finally get it for once. And I felt like it was... I felt like it was satisfying. I felt like that part of it was satisfying. Satisfying enough that I could look past the mistakes they continued to make. So the relationship between Bella and Edward and Jacob is still really, really terribly presented. The attention to details in this movie are in this franchise are horrible. And it's never more clear than when you see them go off on their little European vacation to round up all these other vampires and all these other clans. And you get the Irish ones who come with a little Irish cap. Yeah. And they look like they just stepped off the freaking boat, you know. And you get the black ones, the black clan, the African American clan, and they're like natives who don't say shit, and they're dressed in loincloths and war paint. It's like, okay, whatever, And the New Orleans one who's just sort of grungy, and it's like, okay, whatever. Yeah, these things, because they know these characters ultimately aren't very important, they don't really deal with them in any way. They just kind of, okay, here's this character from this area, so we'll have them look like this. And that's kind of how they are with all of the characters who aren't Bella, Edward, and Jacob. They're just sort of also-rans.
Yeah.
And I keep that.
It's funny you mentioned all that because everybody you mentioned, to jump very far ahead into the story, when they run the credits, the people they show, like, highlighted in the first parts of the credits were these were all the stereotypes that you just ran down. And I was like, man, these people are on screen for 3 minutes. But even right. still, I mean, like... It was almost like they wanted to give. You could tell in the book there was probably a little bit more given to each person because,
oh yeah,
like there wouldn't have been a problem at all in my mind with them just showing these people in the background, not really giving them anything to do or say except for stand there. And that way, even the stereotype works a little bit better because then you're like, oh, that guy's got a walking cap, he's Irish. Oh, that guy's wearing you know, leather and war paint. You know, he's from, you know, Brazil or wherever those guys were from. You know, and that kind of works. But when you kind of give them a little bit of story like they tried to do without giving them a lot of story, it just seems disjointed.
Right.
Speaking of which,
they did manage to make a couple of the characters stand out okay. Like, I liked Lee Pace's character. And maybe this is just because it was Lee Pace and I didn't recognize who he was, but I did like his character a little bit. Sort of a loner type. Well, that was Joe Anderson. Joe Anderson's character is more of a loner, but I liked Lee Pace. And I like Rami Malek, who played the young vampire who had the elemental powers. I liked him as well.
Yeah.
He added a bit of a hopeful touch that a lot of the movies haven't really had. And we never really get to see that next generation of vampires, I guess. And I think that was kind of interesting to see that. You have all these young vampires running around here, but, you know, there's nothing to set up the next generation of vampires. You don't see any of that stuff. So I thought that was kind of cool, and he had nice powers, and
I did like him.
And I've always liked him as an actor too. He was in the Night at the Museum movies and
the Tom Hanks one.
Right.
Yeah, whatever it was.
Larry Crown, and he was also in The Master most recently. So he's an actor that I like a whole lot, and I thought his brief storyline was pretty well done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of the part that killed me a little bit is. I almost want to read the books just to see about them. Like, I thought a lot of the side stories that they just glazed over in a lot of these movies. Now, I'm not a Twilight hater by any means. I'll judge the movies as what they are. And, yeah, I might give a little more credit to an action movie that uses the same kind of cheesy dialogue, but it's not. It doesn't seem as forced, I guess, or something like that in some places. But, you know, there's a lot of side stories that could be really cool. Like, the Voltaire's always just kind of glazed over. I don't think that one movie got a whole, like... plot given to them. Jasper's storyline, the one I liked the most, I think it was New Moon.
Jasper's a cool character played by a really awful actor. Jackson Rathbone is not a good actor. He's actually a really, really noticeably bad actor. Just like he was in The Last Airbender. I mean, he's just not a very strong actor. And I think if somebody else had played that role or played that character, I might have been more interested in him. But
well, it, like his whole story, like when they finally gave him some screen time in whatever movie it was, like when it showed through all the wars and he was teaching him how to fight. I just thought,
you know,
recast if you have to. But I thought that was a cool story to tell. And it kind of makes it worse when they show all these side stories that could be cool, and then they remain with what they're doing with Bella and Edward. I understand that's the middle of it, but it just seems like their story was kind of over. But they're just pulling it out and out and out, and there was just nothing interesting about any of that to me at all, especially because they, you know, I call it the ending, which we'll talk about in a minute, a cop-out, but I think the whole triangle there is a cop-out too. Just, you know, you have this love triangle you build up for 4 movies, and then you're like, oh, wait a second, I wasn't in love with you, I was in love with your fetus, your soon-to-be kid, and now it's gone.
It does invalidate a lot of it. And I think what the worst part of what it does is it makes it seem as if the whole thing was just supernatural by nature. Like, it makes it seem as if the only reason why Jacob liked her was because of some powerful force, but not exactly love. It was something else, something magical. And then once the Renesmee was born, that magic transferred to her. Mm-hmm. You know, and then to me that does invalidate a lot of what we saw in the other movies. But I mean, like I'm saying, the love triangle was so thin anyway. There was never any doubt where it was going to go. So it doesn't really matter to me. Like I don't care as much that thing was totally just pointless. It's just a pointless story.
Do you think it would have been better though if it ended in the what we all thought it was going to end in the beginning, which is the wolves versus vampires?
I thought about that for a while, and my first reaction to what they do, without spoiling it too much, there's a significant twist that happens during the final battle between the werewolves. I mean, between the vampire, the Cullens and their clans, and the Volturi. There's a big twist that happens there, and I felt cheated at first because I felt like the one time there was actual conflict, and I wanted to see the repercussions of this battle. Like, right. We had never seen any impact for anything in any of these movies so far. Oh. And finally, when there was some, they kind of pulled the rug out from under us. And I guess to some extent, I still do feel that way. But I also recognize that that these movies are made for a specific fan base at this point. And yeah. that those people don't want that ending. I mean, I may want that ending. I may want to see them actually have to deal with some darker issues for the few minutes that were left in the movie. But that's not who that's not what the fans want to see. The fans wanted to see a happier ending, a more hopeful ending. Even if it was just a bittersweet one, which I still think it was a bittersweet ending, but they want to see something a little more cheery, and that's what they get. So I understand why they did it. And in a way, I mean, they kind of gave us something that we all thought we wanted, and then didn't. You know, so they kind of played it both ways.
I mean, that whole scene that we're talking about, they pulled the rug out from under us. That's the only time in the movie where I was like I was that was. I don't want to say it was well shot because a lot of it looked stupid, but it was still pulled into it. I'm not sure.
Effects are horrible still.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. It's PG-13, but maybe you should find another way to do things. You know, Blade was could have got away with PG-13.
If this were any other movie, I don't think it would have gotten a PG-13 rating.
I don't think it would have, because the sex alone should give it.
If it were any other movie, it would have gotten R.
Yeah.
There's still no blood in any of those scenes, mind you.
Yeah, it reminds me of the Super Nintendo Mortal Kombat. Remember that?
Right. Yeah. the original Street Fighter where you punched them and they like vomited.
Oh yeah.
I was like, really?
Which is worse than blood, by the way.
If it were the Expendables, they would have gotten R. But since it was Twilight and this is they need to appeal to their base. I think the MPAA was a lot more lenient. Because there's a lot of violence in this movie, to the point where I'm not so sure that younger kids should even be taken to it.
Well, especially not with the scene in question. I mean, and that's the thing is, like, I if you would ask me prior to that scene happening if I had any emotional investment in any character in the entire series, I'd have said no, not a bit. But that scene, I'm like. Okay, and it really ups the stakes for anything and anybody, especially if you hadn't read the book and you don't know what's going to happen. It was really effective in kind of it pulled a Game of Thrones on you almost, and you didn't know who was safe, you didn't know whatever, and like I'm literally on the edge of my seat there, and then I was just like, what?
Totally shocked by the people that were getting killed off.
Yeah,
in that fight, and I was like, holy crap, because I didn't know what happened in the books. So I didn't know if that was the case. Like, I didn't read the books, but my wife has, and I know from her and from other people I've heard from who read the books that the ending was a letdown in the books. I do know how it ends in the books. It's just it's not this by far. This is not what happens in the books.
Well, there's no problem with the happily ever after ending. It's just when you build something that seemed – it's not dark. Dark's not the right word, but when you build something that – over four movies that really feels like it's going to have some kind of consequence somewhere, to just make a Cinderella happy ending. And then there's a final scene in the movie that just felt, I don't know if this was in the book or not, but it just felt, maybe it was the way they shot it, it felt completely tacked on. And you know what, props to them again, because I'm sure it was a throw. I can imagine if I was a fan, that would be awesome to see. But for every movie out there that has a diehard fan base, that it gets built for the popular audience, or the majority of the audience, and not for the fans, this kind of pisses me off. This is the one that went for the fans. There's this tacked on scene at the end where they're, it's one thing leads to another, and it just managed to go into like a recap of the entire series just in pictures.
I have no problem with that. It's like I said, it is a celebratory conclusion to the end of a franchise that has had a ridiculous amount of retention. Mm-hmm. Like, it hasn't slipped at all. I mean, it's stayed. The fan base has been so loyal to this franchise. And as much as I may dislike it, and you may dislike it, and we all may dislike it, it's for them. And I don't mind that so much. I don't look at this one the way I look at the last film, which was so focused on the minutia of this stupid wedding. I mean, and I understand that the fans liked that as well, but anybody else who was watching it, it had to have been just intolerable. Right. This one, I think people who aren't as close to the franchise could actually watch this one and not be wanting to kill themselves halfway through. And I feel like that final bit at the end where they kind of, you know, remind us of every single character who was ever in the franchise. I like that moment. Because it does remind me just how big this franchise really was. It does remind me how big this series really was. Even if I don't remember all of those characters, and I didn't remember about half of them, there were a lot of people that came in and out of this thing, and a lot of recognizable faces. Bryce Dallas Howard, I totally forgot she was even in this thing.
Oh, wow, but, I mean, I didn't even see her in that part.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of people that came in and out of this, and for people who have been invested from day one, that had to have been a nice wrap up.
I didn't see any Amy Kent, though, and that kind of made me mad.
She was there.
Was she? I guess I just tuned out at that point.
Yeah, they showed her. They showed her in a group shot with all of Bella's best friends that didn't turn up in this movie at all. But overall, I mean, I gave this movie a 3 out of 5. I think it's solid. And if you're a fan, it'll be a fairly rewarding and bittersweet experience for you. For everybody else, you'll be happy to see it go.
So. Yeah, I mean, and you know, this kind of puts the shoe on the other foot for me with, you know, me defending so many action movies that are, you know, subpar in most people's eyes. It gets a 1.5 out of 5 for me just because I really – the only thing I enjoyed was when Ashley Greene was on screen. And the other part that I did enjoy was kind of complete – not kind of, completely tainted by the – well, you'll see if you see the movie. I don't want to completely ruin that part. But the only gripe I have past that, I can chop it up to being a tween movie or a genre movie, whatever. But I just feel like a lot more give is given to this by a lot of people, especially like, you know, in the critic world, because, you know, what, regardless of people want to say, oh, I don't listen to critics, people do, because generally, or maybe it's just a coincidence, but, you know, when a movie does better with critics, it generally does better with the audience, people go to see it. And with, like, this movie has a 50% fresh right now on Rotten Tomatoes. I think that's ridiculously high for especially some of the movies that I've seen. Like, there are action movies that are better or as bad as this, and they get, like, 6%. And I just think, you know, like a little bit too much is given to it on the basis. Oh well, the fans are like. I mean, I get that completely, but I think like, you know, some of the people out there need to do that for everybody if they're going to do it for certain things, just because it doesn't give a fair chance to movies.
I'm not sure I know what you mean exactly.
Well, like I'd have to have a listen from you right now, but you know, let's. I'm trying to think. What's a subpar action movie came out in the last year? I don't know. Let's say whatever.
Subpar action movie. Let's
say Shoot 'em in the Head.
Taken 2.
that's worse than this. Like, but you know, it's just like if something's like less of a, like if there's less of a fan base for it, like less of a rabid fan base. Like everybody knows everybody's gonna go see Breaking Dawn, and I think because of its rabid fan base, like it gets a little bit more of. Well, you know, I didn't like it, but – and I'm not saying, like, towards you because, you give the action movies and stuff a fair shake too. But a lot of people are saying the same type of thing that don't give the same fair shake across the board. And I just think that kind of, like, skews what people should think when they're going into this movie, because if I'm looking at this and I'm like, all right, well, you know, the people are saying, you know, you'll probably like it a little bit. But if you're not already invested in, like, the rest of the movies, I don't think there's any chance in hell that you see this and be like, I'm going to see the rest of these. Because it's cool.
You know, I don't think so either. But I don't think there's anybody that's coming into these things cold at this point. I mean, except for maybe the occasional boyfriend who's getting dragged to it. Mm-hmm. That occasional like new boyfriend who's getting dragged to this thing for the first time. You know,
right?
But I seriously doubt he'll go back and want to revisit the other four movies too. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that this one's good enough to make you do that. I'm saying that if you or somebody who's not as invested in these, this one probably isn't as terrible as walking into, say, New Moon and being like, what the fuck? Or walking into Breaking Dawn Part 1, where all it is filling out freaking wedding invitations for 2 hours. That would be freaking horrible. This one, at least you have something that gets an actual story that gets built up to and has a resolution. None of the other four movies have that. So that's why I say this one is probably less awful to come into than the others.
Yeah, I think we just see differently on the resolution part, because to me, just the way it was done was like, because I should have done my research and seen how the book ended out, but I can imagine that the scene that upsets me was kind of just alluded to, and it didn't have as much detail, so it didn't really feel like anything was taken from you. But obviously, if they put this on screen without that part, then you're just like, well, that was a whole lot of nothing happening. So I get that you have to put that in for a movie, but it's just like, to me, there was no resolution. It was kind of like, hey, there's a big problem.
To the best of my knowledge, there's no fight at all in the book.
Yeah, and that's the difference between books. I mean, the resolution that they come to in this movie, like with the people that show up after the I'm like walking carpets around, not saying exactly what happens, but you know the people that show up to give the final resolution. If you were writing a book, you could write it in a way that would be interesting and climactic and epic. But on screen, it's just people walking up and talking.
I think that's what they did though. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I think that's what they did because. Like I said, judging by what happens in the book, there's no fight at all.
Right.
There's nothing. There's nothing but talking and some sort of resolution. But here, like I said, they kind of have it both ways. Guys like me who wanted to see them freaking fight for once actually get to see it. And those who want to see everything end on a happy note, they get that too. So I think they actually did make the decision to not, you know, to not have it be like it was in the book.
Right.
Even if it still ends up in the same place, ultimately, you're appealing to two different audiences. You're appealing to two different kinds of people who want different things. And I think they did just enough to, you know, to satisfy both.
Right.
So.
I just would have preferred a more creative, like, not, you know, give it, here's what you might have wanted, but this is how it really ends. And more of like a kind of merge the two together with the actual stuff that had. Well, either way, I obviously wasn't a fan. And the other two things I want to say before we close out on this, CGI babies, I don't know.
That was really weird. The CGI baby in the beginning, I don't know what the hell they were thinking. I don't know what they were thinking.
I get that they wanted to look like the later actor, but like you can, they were doing that for years and years and years and years, just buying, not buying a baby, you don't buy babies, just going in and hiring a baby that, you know, is similar. Most babies look alike, you know, they just get one with brown eyebrows or blonde eyebrows or, you know, whatever, and it doesn't match the later actor and it works. But that, and again, it's just like the whole imprinting thing, just they actually handled it in a good way on the screen, except for the fact that I knew what the deal was. Like, there are scenes with Jacob at Christmas hanging out with whatever the hell her name is, Renesmith. Like, they're sitting next to each other opening presents, and she's a cute little girl, and he's like, oh, look at Uncle Jacob, and then you're like, wait, that's not Uncle Jacob, this is really creepy.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on right now.
Yeah. Well, all right. I think we've spent 25 minutes talking about Twilight Saga, Breaking Dawn, and I think that's more than enough. Let's move on to Silver Linings Playbook,
which is not about next.
No, it's not about. Well, it is about football.
Well, it is, but isn't like not how I thought it was.
Okay. Well, yeah, football plays a major part in this movie, especially the Philadelphia Eagles. Silver Linings Playbook stars Bradley Cooper as Pat Saltano, a former teacher who gets sent away to a mental institution after he catches his wife in a compromising position with a fellow teacher, and he goes nuts, and things kind of go downhill from there for him. So he spends 8 months in a mental ward, gets out, and wants to rebuild his life. He wants to find the so-called silver lining and rebuild things to the way they were. He wants to get back with his ex-wife and just basically start over again. But instead, things get kind of go off the tracks for him. He meets Tiffany Maxwell, played by Jennifer Lawrence, who has many of the same issues he has. She's got her own mental baggage. She's also someone who's very blunt and says what she feels. Both these people are socially awkward. or socially inept, I think is probably a better phrase for it. So while they're kind of having their little flirtation, I guess you could call it, he's steady trying to get back with his wife, and Tiffany convinces him to join her in a dance competition. And if he does help her with that, then she'll help him get back with his ex-wife. Along the way, he also deals with his parents, played by Robert De Niro and Jackie Weaver, who are trying to deal with how their son is now compared to who he used to be. I want to say that I think Silver Linings Playbook is one of the best romantic comedies I've seen in a very long time. And it, the reason why is because it's totally unconventional. And it takes two characters, played by Bradley Cooper and Jennifer Lawrence, who are not like any other couple we've seen in a romantic comedy in a very, very long time, and very easily could have been unlikable, especially Bradley Cooper's character. Played wrong, he'd be a guy that we'd want to root against. Because he's very arrogant. Whether he's got mental issues or not, I think he was always probably a little bit of a jerk.
Yeah.
And I think that aspect kind of comes through in him. So this very easily could have been played wrong. But I like how David O. Russell kind of keeps a balance here of hopefulness and kind of manic quirkiness. Kind of reminded me of Flirting with Disaster from, I think that was David O. Russell's first film, Flirting with Disaster. Kind of reminded me of that in terms of tone. But
the supporting this is the first cast, major, I think.
Right. The supporting cast is fantastic here, especially Robert De Niro, who I think is amazing as this Philadelphia Eagles-obsessed father. I think he's great. I absolutely love this film.
You know, it's not a good comparison to make, but it's in my mind, it's like How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, and the fact that it's likable for guys and girls. And I know, you know, our critic brother will probably stab me for saying that's a great movie, but that's the one movie I can remember in recent times, you know, that both guys and girls will admit to liking. I mean, Notebook, most guys and girls like it, but guys won't say it. This is going to be one of those movies like that. And I actually wanted to ask you about that unlikable trait. You mentioned David O. Russell, how he played it, but I always kind of chalk that up to the actor playing in the charisma. Like that's a true testament to charisma to me, if you ask me, that you can like somebody that's otherwise unlikable. I mean, and Bradley Cooper is somebody that, you know, because he came to most people's conscience with Hangover, in which he kind of played the same kind of arrogant but likable person, people forget that he's such a good actor and the different types of people he can play. What do you think it lies more with the director or with the actor when it comes to stuff like that?
I think it lies more with the actor. Certainly director plays a part, but I don't know. I think if you had the wrong actor or character like that, could be, like I said, very, very much somebody you don't want to see succeed. And I think Bradley Cooper, who was probably on the greatest role of his career. He definitely is on the greatest role of his career. Has managed to play more characters that are as complex and nuanced as this perfectly. And I think he's quickly becoming one of the best actors in Hollywood right now. I think this is probably the best he's ever been, better than he was in Limitless and better than he was recently in The Words. I think he's far better here in a much more, like I said, nuanced character.
Yeah, you know, I think he's so good that people are actually overshadowing him with Jennifer Lawrence. And you know, I remember our other Punch Drunk critic, Rocky, was saying that they were two impossibly good-looking people. And she's absolutely right. But that's another thing about this movie is, When there's sometimes when there's, and you've heard me say on this show 100 times, like stuff that doesn't have, like George Clooney and the Descendants, I was like, he doesn't look like a middle-aged man. It's not a middle-aged man. These two people are both obviously movie star looking people, but you they're so natural in the way they play everything that you kind of you don't really see how they look the entire time, and you don't really think about how silly that is. But I thought Jennifer Lawrence was, you know, given that the main thing
so
we see her in The Hunger Games and
Yeah,
I mean, and X-Men, nothing we've seen her in before really showed acting teeth, you know what I mean? I mean, she had
Winter's Bones? See, Winter's Bones, she's fantastic.
That was your movie. I watched it once, but I don't know. I just didn't get into it for some reason. But yeah, I guess that's her debut that really put her out there, and you're right about that. I looked at overlooked it, but
I've always found her to be an actress who, regardless of the material, always seems to shine. I mean, we can talk about The Beaver. The Beaver was a solid movie, and her role was
marginal. I forgot she was in that.
Yeah, her role was marginal in that at best, but she's solid in it. She's solid in The Hunger Games, you know, in a totally different type of performance. I think she's one of the best. I mean, she's even good in X-Men Days of Future Past for what she has. I mean, in X-Men First Class for what she has to do.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I would definitely say that this is the movie where she really breaks out and shows what she can do. It shows the level of her potential in this role, because, I mean, she's not only carries a lot of the dramatic weight in this movie, but she carries a lot of the comedy as well. I mean, she's really funny in this too,
which was something I didn't know she really had.
Right, she hasn't really had a chance to do that very often, and I think she's fantastic in it. And amongst an incredible ensemble, she stands out, and that's very difficult to do.
She's in, and Chris Tucker, you know, doesn't outshine. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah, he's pretty good too for his first movie in 5 years.
Yeah. Well, did he get a $75 million paycheck for this one too? Or
I seriously doubt it. He was supposed to be in The Watch also, and then that role fell through. But
that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I wonder if he finally checked his ego at the door, and because David O. Russell doesn't strike me as somebody that would really put up with shenanigans based on a former A-list comedy guy, like straight up comedy guy like him, so he must be put something in check to remain in the movie. But you know, Jennifer Lawrence, I really think she's got. I mean, it's kind of obvious to say now that she's got a future ahead of her. But the thing is, she doesn't. Some of the best actresses out there that are typically or conventionally beautiful, it almost works against them. I think she is obviously beautiful, but just enough. Not typically beautiful, that, you know, she's going to be able to really shine through all that stuff and live way past Hunger Games and X-Men.
Yeah, I mean, I think she's more beautiful in this movie than she's ever been on screen, and maybe it's because she's a little crazy, and hot chicks are always crazy, are always the craziest.
See, either way, I mean, yeah, crazy chicks or hot chicks, vice versa.
It works both ways, but yeah. she's great here. And I'm curious to see how this. I mean, we'll get to it. We'll talk about how it did at the box office in a couple minutes here. But I'm curious to see how it plays when we get around to the Oscar voting, because I feel like it's probably going to get a lot of consideration just because it's David O. Russell, number one, coming off The Fighter. It's going to get consideration because of that. But also, I think it's going to play well with audiences. I think it's going to get a lot of attention for that. Obviously, the pairing of Cooper and Lawrence is going to bring a lot of people in. But I think when they see this movie and see that it's something fresh and new, that it's going to be a serious player. But,
yeah, and I really like that. That's most likely going to happen, or at least be mentioned at the time, because it seems like slowly Oscar buzz movies are getting more and more. Like there's less and less Anna Karenina's and more movies that you can watch and appreciate the performances, but you can also pop in on a Friday night and just, you know, watch and enjoy.
Speaking of Anna Karenina, let's skip Anna Karenina.
But Travis,
after this,
Keira Knightley's going against type in acting in a period piece.
Right. She's not the problem with Anna Karenina.
Is she actually from the 1600s? At this point, I'm uncertain.
No, the problem with Anna Karenina is, despite the fact that it's absolutely gorgeous, has one of the most beautiful sets and production design I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like it's set in this dilapidated soundstage, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like I had some people worried that it was going to be like Dogville from Lars von Trier. No, it's not. The set actually moves and flows, and each scene blends into the next. And you see people changing their costumes as they're moving on to the next scene. It's really incredible to look at.
Is it like a play?
It's almost like that, but not quite. It's a totally unique thing. It's very interesting to watch. The problem is, Tolstoy's story to me is not built for that sort of artifice. It just never really was. Mm-hmm. It's just not. It plays it too straight, I think. And so it just doesn't really work. The characters are kind of kept at a distance from us emotionally. I never could connect with anybody. It's beautiful film to look at, but emotionally it's just way too distant and cold. So that's my problem with Anna Karenina. I gave it a 2.5 out of 5. If that's my capsule review of it, that was it right there. But back to Silver Linings Playbook.
Silver Linings Playbook it was a nice surprise to me. I will admit I didn't really look too much into it before I went to see it, and I just looking at the marquee, you got Jennifer Lawrence coming off Hunger Games and Bradley Cooper coming off like you said, the role of movies he's been in. I wasn't expecting something of this caliber, and I was really pleasantly surprised by that, and it gets a 4 out of 5 from me. Definitely the date movie to see, not Breaking Dawn Part 2.
I think I gave this a 3.5 out of 5. I really did enjoy this quite a bit. I don't want anybody to think that just because I gave it 3.5 out of 5, I don't absolutely love it, because I do. But I do believe I gave this a 3.5 out of 5.
You know, I think if anybody analyzed our scores, I would probably be really, really weird, because my highest scores go to romantic comedies and martial arts films.
Well, the reason why I gave it 3.5 out of 5 and not 4 is because I think at the end it kind of loses some of that originality and becomes a little too conventional. It does lose some of that as we get into the dance routine, the dance contest. It started to become a little paint by numbers. I knew exactly where it was going. So from that point, that's the only reason why I gave it 3.5 out of 5. It's not because of anything else. So that's my reason.
Cool. And at least the Eagles have a reason to talk about something good, because it wasn't their performance this weekend. They can talk about the movie they were featured in that was very good. That was all the releases we had this week, right?
Yep, that's it. We talked about Lincoln last week, so,
That is opening wide in the D.C. area for anybody that was looking for it last week. It is out everywhere now in this area.
Yep. There you go.
So, box office. You go ahead. I don't even want to say the numbers for number one.
Opening at number one is exactly the movie you thought was going to start at number one. It is Breaking Dawn Part 2, opening with an incredible $141.3 million. That's just domestic, folks. On the foreign market, it actually opened even better at $199 million, making its opening weekend haul $340.9 million, which is, wow. I wrote on here that I don't think for a second that Summit Entertainment is going to let this franchise go. I just don't think it's going to happen when you've been this consistent over the years. And the fact that this is actually their highest international total yet out of all the movies, at least debut-wise, to me that means the market is growing. Mm-hmm. So there's no good reason for them to let it go. And I'm sure Stephanie Meyer will be more than happy to help them cook up a couple more stories for this thing.
And I hope they turn her down, and I hope they go Pirates of the Caribbean with it. This is what I'm hoping for. I hope they go Pirates of the Caribbean with it, and Orlando Bloom and Keira Knightley, they're on an island, they're good, and Edward and Bella are good, and Jacob's
Not be surprised if we don't see Bella and Edward, and we see them focus on other characters, maybe even Jacob Embernesme. I wouldn't be surprised. Well, I mean, from what I've heard, that there are already stories about those two. I don't think they go the route you think they go. I wouldn't be surprised if that's what happens, because Taylor Lautner does not, as of right now, does not have much coming up that makes me think he'll be too busy. Not like Pattinson and Stewart, who have been lining up projects left and right and are seem to be legitimately trying to move on beyond Twilight. Taylor Lautner isn't. He's just kind of there.
I bet you he could if he did one thing. If he magically could deepen his voice. You're gonna laugh, but I swear to God, that's why the Abducted. You know, that's why he can't be an action star, because it's like Mike Tyson. But that's why he didn't talk much.
Abducted really hurt his momentum. That was supposed to be his big coming out party as an action hero and as a leading man in the movie. I mean, it didn't just not do well. It bombed. Like, yeah. It bombed badly. I think that really hurt his momentum because he had a couple movies lined up around that point. I know he had that Stretch Armstrong movie that Michael Bay was producing, and that just died as soon as the production failed. So
he's
and
he's got a high pitched voice. So I mean, that's something like it works. It works in Twilight, but it's not going to work for testosterone filled movies for guys to go to.
Well, I know he's going to be in a Grown Up sequel. But
just for him,
he's going
to
be in a
way to really get
that
momentum going.
So he'll be squaring off against Adam Sandler in a movie that will no doubt be unfunny as shit. But he's got that, and not a whole lot else beyond that. So I won't be surprised if we see Jacob and Renesmee in a spinoff Twilight franchise in a few years.
As long as there's an opening sequence that shows he kept his hands to himself. And oh, yeah, my wife brought up a good point. they talk about her growth in the movie, and there's one point where you see how long it's going to take her to age fully. She's going to be fully grown when she's 7, but she's still going to be 7. So does he wait until she's 21 in human years?
I don't know.
But I bet you $150 right now on Grown Ups 2, there's going to be a scene at a pool when Taylor Lautner takes his shirt off and Adam Sandler takes his shirt off. And so does Kevin James, and they all look down at their stomachs, and they're like,
"Of course. Of course there's going to be that scene. That scene was written 2 years ago.
Yeah.
That scene was written before Grown Ups had even come out yet. That scene was already written.
That's in his contract. Stock scene. I take my shirt off. Somebody else feels bad about themselves.
Grown Ups, and I really don't want to see a sequel. In fact, I'd rather see a continuation of Twilight than a Grown Up sequel, but oh well. At number two was Skyfall with $41.5 million. It's now at $161 million domestically. It's at $669 million worldwide. It is the highest grossing Bond film, highest grossing Bond film ever now, after only just a few weeks of being released. So, yeah, it's doing hard. Yeah. So if Daniel Craig's going to do a couple more movies, he's going to go down as the most lucrative James Bond of all time. Number three is Lincoln, which expands to 1,775 theaters after only being in like 11 last week. $21 million this week. It's up to $22 million. It'll probably do well for a very long time, at least to the end of the year probably. It'll do well, especially as the Oscar race heats up. So that one's performing well. Number four is Wreck-It Ralph, which drops to number four, $18.3 million. It's at $121 million domestic, which is really good. We talked about this last week, where it's weird how the Disney movies don't ever match Pixar's or DreamWorks's, even if they have the same level of critical acclaim. It's just strange.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really get it. Number five is Flight, which is at $61 million total now. Six is Argo, which is up to $92. Seven is Taken 2 at $134.6 million. Eight is Pitch Perfect, which is still hanging around, $62 million. Nine is Here Comes the Boom, which won't go away, $41 million. And squeaking in at number 10, actually there was a log jam at number 10, but I just chose The Sessions because it was the only one that was new. The Sessions squeaks in there at $900,000. It's up to $2.8 million. It's only playing at 400 theaters right now. This is another one that has a lot of Oscar buzz for John Hawks and Helen Hunt.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised. I think both of them will end up getting nominated ultimately.
They should. I mean,
yeah,
that's one reason I love these Oscar screens we get, even when they're movies I have seen. Mm-hmm. This and Safety Not Guaranteed, when I got those screeners and I watched them that weekend, and it was just a whole other level, like, for both movies. But you know, certainly The Sessions, like, I had an appreciation for, but like John Hawks especially, it's just wow. The whole movie is just very wow.
Yeah, well, I keep reminding people that I saw this thing a year ago. So when I started getting asked about it in December, I mean in November, I was like, it took me a while to recall how I felt about it.
Mm-hmm.
So because I saw it at Sundance back when it was called The Surrogate, and yeah, and I had to remind. And I wrote my review back then too, so I was like, I had to go revisit my review to remember what I liked and didn't like about it. But I remember enjoying it and recognizing even back then that it was going to be an Oscar contender and that Hawks and Hunt would get nominated for something. And then it was a crowd pleasing film, and I remember being a little disappointed. And I'm having a hard time articulating it right now. Go ahead.
Did you watch it again once? I haven't watched it again yet.
I let Rocky borrow my screener for it, and I'm waiting for her to send it back to me. I do want to watch it again though.
Well, once you watch it again, remember to talk about it on the show, because I'd be interested to see a little insider stuff with Sundance, because I mean it's so long ago, and they do use those kind of as test markets a little bit. Where, you know, I'm curious to see what would have changed, if anything. Mm-hmm. Between those two, because I know a lot of times they'd be like 4-hour director's cuts of movies, but you know, just even for a movie like this, to see what has changed.
Right. Also coming out this week, Silver Linings Playbook opened at 16 sites, did really well, $458,000. That's an average of $28,000. And Anna Karenina opened also at 16 sites and earned $315,000.
Mm-hmm.
Both of those should probably expand over the next few weeks.
Now, that Weinstein smart play for putting Silver Linings out, very limited, just to get to keep the word out, and then, you know, expand once everybody, because their entire market went to see Twilight.
Right.
The people that would look, you know, read a quick synopsis and go see it. So that shows why they're the little movie studio that could over the last 20 years.
Yep.
30 years now, shit.
Yep.
Nothing major in the rest of the top 100. But Blu-rays, which is really not nothing coming out on Blu-ray either. Incredible 2 is coming out on Blu-ray.
That's the main one.
As far as new releases that were major, that's about it. One cool thing that's coming out is Tarantino, I guess it's 20. I was about to say double X. I guess 20 years of Tarantino, which has Pulp Fiction, Inglourious Basterds, Reservoir Dogs, Kill Bill, Jackie Brown, Death Proof, and True Romance. That's pretty much everything he did.
It's his whole filmography, the first 20 years of his career, and we put up some things on our site. But as much as I was excited for it, I also recognize it as sort of a they should have used this as a chance to put in Kill Bill, the whole effing story, or whatever the hell he was going to call it, the whole effing affair,
mm-hmm.
Which would have been, you know, both Kill Bills 1 and 2 combined chronologically, you know.
That's so there's not anything special about this?
Nope, it's just the movies. So that's a little disappointing because I already have all the Tarantino movies I want. I don't really want Reservoir Dogs again. I don't really want Jackie Brown again. Mm-hmm. So I'm probably not going to get this. But for those who are Tarantino fans and, you know, and don't have this or really want just the collector set, then this will be a solid pickup for you.
Yeah, and definitely if you're going to pick it up Tuesday from us, punchdrunkcritics.com. Click on Shop at Punch Drunk Critics in the upper hand. Shop at Punch Drunk Critics in the upper right-hand corner. That's going on the blooper reel for later. Because right now, if you pre-order now up until Tuesday, you can get it for 50% off. All those movies we mentioned, every Tarantino movie, $70. So if nothing else, you should buy 17 of them for gifts at holidays. I'm not saying that you get a bit.
Also coming out on DVD this week is Alter Egos. This is the superhero movie from Smodcast Productions, Kevin Smith's outfit. Mm-hmm. We had a trailer for this probably just a few weeks ago, actually. I don't remember there being too many big names in this, except for maybe Danny Masterson. But it looks kind of funny. I really want to check it out and see how it is. So I did pre-order myself a copy. And if it sucks, I'll just trade it in. But that comes out this week, and if somebody's looking for a Christmas gift for me, they can get me the complete Thin Man collection, because
I am a fan
of Nick and Nora Charles. Oh yeah, Nick and Nora Charles, and I'm still scared of that Johnny Depp remake that they're supposedly doing. I think it's in turnaround right now, but that one's been in the works for a couple years, and you know, it didn't seem to be too much movement on it, but I really don't want it to happen because I like the original so much.
That's definitely one of those classics that everybody should take. I mean, everybody says there are a lot of classics. Gone with the Wind is pretty much unwatchable to modern audiences for the first time, or at least younger people, you know. It's 4 hours.
The problem is, if they did a Nick and Nora Charles, a Thin Man movie right now, they would try to turn it into Sherlock Holmes. And that's why it would piss me off. You know, that's exactly what they would do with it. So
some things are better left well enough alone.
Right.
I remember my grandmother, I think, telling me about the Thin Man like a long time ago. Or no, it was maybe my mom. I hope she doesn't hear that because she'll be very insulted. And telling me about it. And I actually, one of the first older things I took a look at. It was really good. Speaking of older things that are really, really good, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, the complete series, original series, is coming out on DVD.
Yeah.
Check that out. Were you a Power Rangers fan?
I was not. I hated it. I hated it always.
Yeah, I liked it the first year, and then it was just like, no, not good.
Oh, no, I did like Amy Jo Johnson as the Pink Ranger.
Oh, God.
But otherwise, I was not a fan of the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
So hot. Back in the day. Oh, man. I think the little Japanese guy in her suit was hot. But
the little
Japanese
guy in her suit?
Yeah, well, you know, when she put the helmets on, it wasn't them anymore.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying.
You know what? That series is a lot of things. I mean, I'm not going to waste any more time, but hey, real quick. That series is a lot of things, but the makers were freaking geniuses. I mean, it's just complete recycled, redone.
It still comes out. I mean, it still comes out. I mean it hasn't gone away.
The fight, I never realized it until I read something on it, and then I went, because it was on Netflix instant, and for nostalgia's sake, I watched an episode. You don't realize when you're a kid watching it that every kind of scene where they're just moving around, not actually fighting the villain of the day, where you can see the villain, it's the same clip over and over and over again. It's just genius editing, and they made $10 billion, so congrats to them.
Yep. All right. Anything on streaming or anything like that? Or
actually, nothing new, surprisingly. Yep. Usually, there are a bunch of other old stuff and nothing really of note, so that's
okay. All right. New trailers that came out this week that are up on the site right now. The most exciting one to me was Now You See Me. This is a movie that I've been hyping up on the site for a couple of years now. It's from director Louis Leterrier, who did The Hulk and also did Clash of the Titans. This is the illusionist heist film with Jesse Eisenberg, Woody Harrelson, Isla Fisher, Dave Franco, Morgan Freeman, Michael Caine, Mark Ruffalo, Melanie Laurent, Common. It's an incredible ensemble. The trailer kind of plays like Ocean's 11 meets The Prestige, which I think is a pretty awesome combination.
Yeah.
So
best thing about Breaking Dawn Part 2 is the trailer for this movie. It's amazing, and I didn't realize how much I missed Melanie Laurent until I saw this trailer, but kind of threw me back a pace when I saw that Jesse Eisenberg was kind of like not a nerd anymore.
No, and that's one thing I liked about it too, was that he's not doing that part. I mean, he's not playing that role. He's playing somebody who at least appears to have a lot more confidence, because you can't do that kind of, you can't play that type of character. You can't do that job as an illusionist without having confidence.
Yeah, you call him a magician's nerd.
It's the only way you convince people is that you're confident in what you're doing.
Exactly.
So we have to see him play that type of character, which I think is interesting in and of itself.
He's definitely separated himself from the battle between him and Michael Cera for that type of role, because he just the actor that will stay. I mean, you put a little chin stash on him and he just walks around like he's a cool guy at school. I mean, it's a completely different person, and it's kind of a progression for him from what you saw in The Social Network, because as nerdy as he was playing what's his name. My head is taking these details away, sorry. As nerd as he was playing Facebook Boy, he was very confident. He was very assertive, and that's who he is in this, but he actually looks the part. And past that, it just looks really cool. Like, everything, the illusions look cool, the lights, everything looks cool about it.
Right, yeah, I agree. Also coming out this week on trailers on the site is the Melissa McCarthy, Sandra Bullock buddy cop comedy, The Heat, from director Paul Feig, who directed Bridesmaids. I was a little disappointed in that one. It just looked like fairly generic humor to me. Mobius, which has a very Inception-esque trailer. That one stars Joan Dujardin from The Artist. A new trailer from On the Road. Beautiful Creatures, put out another new trailer. We got the first trailer for The Mortal Instruments, City of Bones, with Lily Collins. Yes, another young adult adaptation.
That looked awesome, though. I gotta admit.
It does look great. And actually, I think that a lot of these young adult adaptations look good. Beautiful Creatures looks fantastic. The Mortal Instruments looks great. I think they're doing some really good things now that Twilight is going away. They're not just doing the same old crap over and over again. If they're going to wear this genre out, which is apparently what they're going to do, then they're going to do some new and different things. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, well, and you know, what did you think of, speaking of Twilight getting on the way, Stephanie Meyer's next, I don't think we talked about The Host at all on here.
The Host? I think The Host looks like shit. Oh, that was going to be I was going to say, looks like the same old, and that's The Host. And of course, I guess it should look like the same old, since it's coming from Stephanie Meyer. But this one is basically Twilight with space aliens who can possess your body. It just looks ridiculous.
Yeah, even Warm Bodies, which is a cross between two worn-out genres.
I actually don't like the trailer for Warm Bodies all that much, and that's another one I was really excited for. Mm-hmm. But it looks like it's going to be tonally all over the place.
I can see that.
And usually Jonathan Levine is good at that. I mean, the guy made a cancer film funny with 50-50. He made a horror movie new and unique with All the Boys Love Mandy Lane. He made a drug movie solid with The Wackness. I mean, so he's good at usually balancing different genres, but this one does not look good at all. So, I mean, we'll see. The first trailer for Admission came out. This is the dramedy with Tina Fey and Paul Rudd. That one looks good. Mm-hmm. And also a new trailer for Oz the Great and Powerful, which still looks beautiful. Might be the most beautiful film of 2013, just judging by the trailer.
Yeah, and judging by Michelle Williams, I don't think she's ever looked as pretty as she does in this trailer.
It's because she's a witch, and she's all dressed up in flowing white garments and shit. She's got golden magic energy surrounding her half the time. I guess she does look beautiful.
maybe that's it. But she
really does look good.
This trailer's not that much different than the other ones, but it's really got a lot of people talking this time. Like I've heard everybody I know talking about Oz after this. Trailer, and I looked back and there wasn't a new one, so I was like, wow, I guess people just missed the first one. But yeah, it looks gorgeous.
Yeah, a Red Band trailer for the ABCs of Death. It's a horror movie that's coming out, another horror anthology. The first trailer for 21 and Over, this is the movie from the Hangover writers, and basically it's just a young version of the Hangover. Mm-hmm. That's really all it is. But it does feature some costume design from our friend Nell Minow's daughter, which is an interesting side note. The first trailer for the Europa Report, which is the sci-fi film starring Charlton Copley from the A-Team and District 13. That one, it looks okay.
Yeah.
So lots of trailers.
And just while I'm looking at it, we got to mention, because we didn't talk about it last week on the show, is you did an interview with Phil Lamar, which is up on blogtalkradio.com/punchdrunkcritics right now, that everybody needs to check out. I've always liked the guy. He was one of the main actors I liked in Mad TV.
Yeah, me too.
He was always good. He actually kind of surprised me because I when he was talking about Pulp Fiction, I was like, holy crap, that was him in Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
The scene that made Samuel Jackson famous, pretty much. So.
Yeah, he was in Pulp Fiction. He had some funny things to say about that. But he has some interesting things to say about Star Wars, too. He's a big Star Wars fan. He's been the voice of Kit Fisto on the Clone Wars cartoon. Mm-hmm. So he knows a little bit about it. And he has some interesting things to say, and I thought the thing that got my attention the most was he talks about how the movies are actually the weakest part of the franchise at this point. And I have no doubt
about that. Yeah, I think he's right.
When you go back and you watch them all, yeah, they're still good. But the Star Wars universe has expanded to the point where everything else is sort of sustaining it and not the movies at this point. You know, it's grown beyond the six movies we've seen already. So I think he's absolutely right about that.
No doubt. Yeah, I'm a self-professed defender of the prequels, but over time, I guess the excitement wore off, and I bought the Blu-ray set. I haven't had one inkling to want to watch the prequels, but I've watched Jedi like three times since I got it. You know, the original trilogy still stands up, but I mean, the amazing thing, you can say what you want about George Lucas, and even if it was by mistake, he didn't see all these things coming, and it was just a happy accident that people really gravitated towards it, and talented people work on it. But the Star Wars universe is one of the most amazing things in entertainment ever, I think. You know, what I wanted to ask you about was, I saw you wrote something about Paul Greengrass, and the drama Memphis about Martin Luther King Jr. is moving forward.
Uh-huh.
We had talked about this a while ago, and I couldn't understand why there hadn't been a movie about his life already, given all the other biopics. And you had mentioned a lot of stuff about his estate and getting things. Right. Now, is this going to be going around his estate, or did they finally give up some of the
No, the estate has their own movie in development with DreamWorks. This is one, the one that Paul Greengrass is doing is not going to have their blessing. Because what they were objecting to was the fact that it was showing a lot of Dr. King's faults. I mean, it's gonna talk a little bit about the extramarital affairs he had and other things. So, Paul Greengrass's film Memphis is moving forward again. It had actually died out, I think, in April of last year. Universal backed out, and because the estate wasn't helping them out either, the project just sort of died. But now it's coming back. They found new backers. Producer Scott Rudin is back in there, and the film is moving forward. And basically, it's going to deal with the last few months of Dr. King's life in the spring of 1968. And it's going to be around that time where he's dealing with sanitation workers, and they're striking for equal pay. And it's also going to be juxtaposed by the search for James Earl Ray, the man who ultimately killed him. So it's going to go into a lot of things that were going on in King's life at that time, because he had also been very vocal about the Vietnam War during that time, was taking a lot of heat for that, and also the allegations of extramarital affairs. So it's going to talk about all that stuff. So it should be an interesting film, and probably already has its place set for the Oscars whenever it comes out.
Oh, no doubt.
Just because of Greengrass and the subject matter.
I really want to watch. I mean, when you look at the other movie about a major name in the civil rights movement, you got, you know, Malcolm X is Denzel Washington, or Denzel Washington's Malcolm X, with such like a perfect casting, at least look wise. I wonder who will get to play King. But it's also kind of interesting to note that if they're doing it around 1968, I mean, the I Have a Dream speech was 63. So, you know, that's kind of interesting that they're going to move their focus from what anybody that was sitting down and saying, I'm going to write a King movie, would first put their focus on. You know, you'd think it would climax at that area, but I mean, that's a pretty cool move.
Yeah. Or anything else that you were interested in?
Yeah. Tom Hardy, Splinter Cell.
Oh, yeah. Tom Hardy's going to be starring in the Splinter Cell adaptation. We don't really know much else about it at this point, to be honest, but him as Sam Fisher is pretty freaking cool.
Yeah. And if you guys haven't seen it, go to the site and check it out. Check out the article we got up there. Because in true picking the hottest picture of a girl fashion, well, this is going to sound wrong because it's not a hot picture of Tom Hardy, but the picture you got up of him, he's got the black turtleneck. He's got everything except for the three lens night vision. You can see Sam Fisher right there. I was kind of looking at him like, well, he can play the part, no doubt. I mean, he can play whatever he wants in my mind, but he looks the part in the picture you got there. So it looks like a good thing to come.
Yeah, that's why I picked that picture. I was like, I need a picture of him holding the big gun. So,
dress in black, hold a gun.
Exactly. A couple things I had here. I'm just going to lump all the Star Wars news together, because pretty much every day there's a new Star Wars story. So I'm just going to put them all together here and kind of go through them in order, culminating with the most recent. The one that came out last week, not too long after our show, was a rumor that Darth Vader was going to be returning for Star Wars Episode 7 to be a part of the new trilogy. This had the internet buzzing, of course, with a lot of people hating the idea. Mm-hmm. And personally, I thought I would hate the idea, but I really don't. I really don't hate it, because don't you feel like the Star Wars trilogy wouldn't be the same if Darth Vader wasn't there? I mean, he's been there for the first two trilogies, and we kind of need to see his story continue, I think. I mean, yeah, it quote-unquote ended at the end of Return of the Jedi, but I feel like a Star Wars without Darth Vader is a lesser Star Wars.
I think right now, looking at it with what we've been given to work with, that's you know, a good analysis of it. I mean, the two problems I have with it is, number one, how do they do it? One of the things that the Star Wars universe is famous for that I've never liked in TV or movies is clones. You know, not the Clone Wars, but when a character dies off and then, oh, wait, we have clones of him somewhere. The other thing is, I would really like to, because Darth Vader is so iconic because somebody thought of a character that was so iconic. I would love to see, now it's a gamble because it might not happen, but I would love to see you know, another character in the universe kind of not just take the mantle, but really become the next generation of an amazing, iconic character from this universe.
I feel like there's, I mean, I feel like there's still more stories that can be told with him. Like we've seen him go from the innocent to the disillusion, to the villain, and ultimately a redemption. But we need to see what he does with that redemption. I feel like there's a story there that could still be told. I guess that's how I feel about it right now.
I would say, I mean, part of me kind of wishes this Disney merger happened sooner, just because they gave Lucasfilm too much time to kind of not do anything, but at the same time block everything up. I would have loved to see a movie that was all Vader that took place, you know, in the years after Revenge of the Sith when he's, you know, clearing out the rest of the Jedi. But now, I mean, you have the games. God damn. Starkiller. What were the games that were so Force Unleashed? The Force Unleashed games that kind of filled in that gap. I'm pretty sure they put that as canon. But even if they don't, it's going to kind of be distracting for anybody that's, you know, watching it. As far as after he's gone, I don't see what they could do, just because it would kind of shake up the whole story that was told to have him as Vader and not as Anakin once he's dead.
Yeah. OSLCX on our chat room says, no way that Tom Hardy is Sam Fisher.
Look at the picture. Look at the picture and tell me that again.
He says Eric Roberts would be better.
Eric, like best of the best Eric Roberts? Sam Fisher's great-grandfather or Sam Fisher?
Yeah. Well, Sam Fisher is an older gentleman, if I remember the games right, But it would never be Eric Roberts.
Solid Snake, maybe.
Right. Yeah, I would agree with that. All right. More Star Wars news here. Producer Frank Marshall, I'm trying to go in order here. Producer Frank Marshall said a few days ago that there are only a couple of candidates left, that he knows who the choice is. Frank Marshall is a very chatty producer. He talked a lot during the run up to the Bourne Legacy, and he talked a lot afterwards about Bourne 5. Mm-hmm. So he's a guy who likes to talk a lot. Now, he's not actually producing this film, if I remember right, but his wife is Kathleen Kennedy, who is the new president of Lucasfilm. So he might have some interesting pillow talk there about what's going on with Star Wars.
Or he might have some weeks on the couch if he lets too much go.
Exactly, if he revealed anything. But he says there's a couple of candidates left. He knows who the person is that will get the job. Now, following up on that, Brad Bird, who was one of the three that was rumored to have read Michael Arndt's story treatment. It was Brad Bird, Steven Spielberg, and J.J. Abrams. Brad Bird has pulled himself out of the running because he's doing a 1952 for Disney. So, I mean, I thought he was a great choice, I always knew that he'd be too busy with that, because that's a major project. He'd be too busy for that. To do Star Wars. But the new thing that came up, literally I wrote it right before the show started, and I put it up, was something that Colin Trevorrow said back in the summer. Now, Colin Trevorrow is the guy who directed Safety Not Guaranteed, and as you well know, and I think we talked about it last week, he's my choice to be the guy to get the job. And I always thought that just the fact that he was mentioned, because he's such an off-brand choice. Like, he's not the first name that comes up. Because when you look at what people are talking about, fans are clamoring for some huge name to take on this job, right? Mm-hmm. But you throw in a guy like Colin Trevorrow, and he just sticks out like a sore thumb. Yeah, Safety Not Guaranteed is perfect when you look at the genre, the combination of styles that are in that movie. It's perfect for Star. He's the perfect guy for Star Wars.
No doubt.
Because he's not a big name, people are just sort of writing him off. But earlier in the week, I had posted his comments about the job, and he sounded like he had been like he had given it far more thought than anybody else had. Like, he was talking about the future of Star Wars, where it should go, what he would do. He had given it a lot of thought, and that much was obvious. Now, here comes this story that came out today that I just put up a few minutes ago, and it comes from something he said last summer, which is right around the time we know he met with George Lucas after Safety Not Guaranteed. Now, here's what Trevorrow said. Read into this what you will. He says, I can't speak with any specificity as to what the next thing will be. He's talking about what his next project would be.
Mm-hmm.
There are amazing opportunities that have arisen as a result of this. One of them, I will say, will probably create a good deal of ire against me on the internet when people find out what it is. So I just want to say in advance that I promise you, for all those who love the mythology that I will be tackling, trust that I love it as much as you do, and I will respect it and hopefully make it not suck. How
nothing
is
else
that
it could
not
be.
Star Wars?
Zippy Chan. I mean, it could have been Twilight, but somebody else directed that. There's nothing else it could have been.
It has to be Star Wars.
I'm a fan, and I say things wrong all the time, so nobody take offense to this, but we don't know what the fuck we want, people. You know, we think big name equals a good movie, and for a lot of stuff that's true, but not for – it's almost never true for an established mythology that is being – that it was defined by something or someone else. You need somebody that's not going to think they're bigger than it. You need somebody that's not going to try to put their own stamp on it, but still give it what it needs to for the fans. Putting a big name on Star Wars, as cool as it sounds, if you look under the surface, it would not be good for it at all, especially because you got somebody that if they're super successful, they're not going to want to keep with it. That's why you need somebody to make it that's actually a fan of it, that doesn't mind working with it for two or three or four movies.
Right.
Not somebody that's going to get one shot and out, because then it's a whole bunch of other stuff that goes wrong.
Right. I want to see somebody tackle this thing that we're not totally sure what he brings to the table. Like, I know, like, Matthew Vaughn is probably the other guy who's the other front runner, other than Colin Trevorrow. I know what Matthew Vaughn brings. I like him as a director, but I've seen so many of his movies that I know what he's going to do. And that's not saying it would be bad. It'd probably be excellent.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to see what somebody like Trevorrow does, because we don't know where he's at. Like, we've seen what he can do with an indie film, what he can do with a small budget with Safety Not Guaranteed. He can do quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
What I want to see is what he can do with no strings attached, with no reins, like with a bigger budget. You know, I want to see what he can do. Like, what are the limits of his creativity and his imagination? I want to see that. So
yeah.
I'm more interested in seeing what he would do with these movies than anybody else. I don't want a Steven Spielberg on these. I don't want a Jon Favreau on these. I don't want those people on Star Wars.
Yeah.
I'd rather see somebody like Colin Trevorrow do it. And based on this, I said it a few days ago that I thought he's the guy. I'm saying right now he's the guy. He's the guy who's going to do this thing.
That quote in mind, I don't see any way that's unless something was changed, I don't see any way that he's not. It's funny you mentioned Favreau, because that's a perfect example of kind of what I'm talking about. Before Iron Man, when people said Jon Favreau is directing Iron Man, well, number one, people didn't care about Iron Man back then, but you know, it would have been the name that anybody would have chose for it. But look how that turned out. And you know, it doesn't guarantee it by any means. It certainly anything's got a good shot of its own shot at succeeding. And as we saw with Man with the Iron Fist, just being a fan of a genre or a certain thing can sometimes be a negative thing. But you know, I think from what I saw in Safety Not Guaranteed, and from what you just told me in that quote, I'm confident in his choice. I just want to know what the fucking story is going to be about. I'm dying here.
Yeah, like you said, Luke in his 30s and 40s, whatever. But I mean, that in and of itself isn't a story though. So I mean, that's just maybe we can. It might have Luke in his 40s or whatever, or 50s, whatever. But that's not going to be the story. It has to be something else.
Right.
So I don't know. I'm curious to see where this is going to go to. But I also don't want to know too much.
Yeah,
so who knows?
When the way I got started, first being interested in everything about like I've always loved movies, but the way I really got like scrounging the internet for the details and all this stuff was during the prequel trilogy. I couldn't get enough. After the first time I did it, I said I'd never do it again. True mark of a movie nerd, I did it over and over and over again. Also a heroin junkie, but you know, it's as much as I want to stay away and be surprised, there's a zippy chance it's going to happen. So
yeah.
We'll just take what it is.
Yeah. Other news, briefly, Transformers 4 casting has begun. There's a number of actors who are already signing up to who are already going to be screen tested for the fourth Transformers movie. One is Isabelle Cornish, who is Abby Cornish's younger sister. One is Nicola Peltz. She was the lead actress in The Last Airbender. She's actually pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Gabriella Wilde, who was in The Three Musketeers. And Margaret Qualley, who is Andy McDowell's daughter. The role they're going to be playing is the daughter of Mark Wahlberg in the film. So she'll have the, she'll basically just be a damsel in distress or something like that. But the role of her boyfriend, who we learned a few weeks ago is going to be like this Texas race car driver. The role for her boyfriend is going to be played. The guys who are testing for that are Luke Grimes, who appeared in Taken 2, Hunter Parrish, who was on Showtime's Weeds, Jack Rayner, who I don't really know, Brenton Thwaites, who was in the really awful Blue Lagoon, The Awakening, kind of sequel, kind of whatever, to the original Blue Lagoon. And Landon Liberon, who was in Terra Nova, which is a show I watched for a couple of weeks until I figured out it was horrible. Oh, and also Transformers 4 is probably going to be set in China. Why? Because of box office. Anybody who knows, who followed Iron Man 3 and how it's a co-production with China now, basically for box office, and also the Red Dawn remake, which had all the villains changed from Chinese to North Korean, so as not to offend the Chinese for increased box office. This probably won't come as much of a surprise to you. So.
Yeah, all of you, America's not going to be a superpower. Chinese conspiracy theorists, have at it.
Yeah, I mean, this is probably going to be the trend. I mean, China, they're really selective about the movies that they will show, that they will release across their nation. You see a lot of these, and because they're such a large market, you're going to see a lot more of these blockbusters either setting themselves in China or going in with China as co-producers, which is what Iron Man did also. This is what they're doing, filling their casts with Chinese actors. Iron Man 3 did that as well. And basically bending themselves over backwards to appease them. So China even owns Hollywood, folks. They already own half this country anyway, but now they also own Hollywood. So that's kind of how it is.
Thankfully, we can say whatever we want because this show is censored in China and they won't hear us.
Exactly. And lastly, it looks like Christopher McQuarrie is going to be directing Mission Impossible 5. McQuarrie is one of Tom Cruise's main go-to guys now. Ever since Valkyrie, Christopher McQuarrie has been his guy. He worked with him on Night and Day. He worked with him on Mission Impossible, Ghost Protocol. And they're working together on... Jack Reacher, which comes out next month, and it looks like that's who Tom Cruise wants to direct the next Mission Impossible movie. I think it's amazing how that franchise has gone from Tom Cruise possibly being pushed out with Jeremy Renner coming aboard to Tom Cruise is firmly in the driver's seat for it again. Like, he's never going to go away from it. Like, how quickly that turned around.
Yeah, I really feel some age scare there from Tom Cruise is the one old school action star that's really not been all about the my knee hurts, I can't keep fighting, all this stuff, but that was kind of his Passion of the Torch movie, and he just kind of held on to it, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when the movie does as well as Ghost Protocol did, there's no way they're going to let him go. There's no way he's going to go anywhere.
Especially considering that Renner really didn't really have too much to do in the movie. I mean, he played a big part, but he was still overshadowed every step of the way by Cruise.
Wow, somebody put something really funny on your Facebook page.
What?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if you should go look at it now while the
show's going on. Oh, man. What do you guys want to
do? Somebody put something really funny on there that I think is hilarious. I don't know why that's there or who did it. But it's
That's not hilarious. That's awesome. Profile pic. So yeah, she's like, even retro. She and Julian likes it immediately. Thank you, Julian.
I know. I put a big fat picture of Amy Jo Johnson on his Facebook page. So
well played, sir.
Dressed in pink.
Yes.
Oh man, it's funny. Anyway, I think that pretty much wraps up the show.
I think
Thanksgiving is coming up. In a few days, but I think we'll still be. You'll be around next Sunday, right?
Yeah, I'll be here.
Yeah. So we'll be here. And next week's show is pretty jam packed. So we're going to figure some shit out here. We got Rise of the Guardians, the animated film, which looks fantastic. Actually, I just saw it yesterday, so I know what it is. The Red Dawn remake is coming out in a few days. Also, Life of Pi.
That one too.
Life of was that?
I said Travis also saw that one too. You'll notice the magnificent missing permits.
I did see that. Life of Pi comes out also, and Hitchcock comes out on Friday. The first three movies come out on Wednesday. Hitchcock comes out on Friday. So we got a busy show next week. We're going to figure out how to chop some of this down a little bit, but we'll get to it.
Yeah, I can't wait to see Hitchcock. Brett, I'm still hopeful for, but yeah, we'll get to all that stuff and more.
Was my lack of enthusiasm that obvious?
No, which thought about it. So, and you actually did a pretty good job because you just kind of glazed right over. You're like, Rise of Guardians is so awesome, and yeah, Red Dawn comes out too. And
speaking of Red Dawn, I have a couple of Red Dawn Blu-rays and Red Dawn gear. That I was just sent from the studio just yesterday. So I'm going to try to put something up here on the site where you can win a copy of Red Dawn and some Red Dawn swag.
Is this kind of open to employees, founders, and relations of Punch Drunk?
Believe me, I was tempted to just keep the Blu-rays and just like give people like the Red Dawn hats that are in here and the Red Dawn shirts and just keep the DVDs, the Blu-rays, but...
leather sleeved high school jackets.
there's a Red Dawn bandanas, Red Dawn caps, Red Dawn shirts. It's a lot of stuff actually. So
and don't forget your commemorative edition Red Dawn mullets, which we'll be sending you in the mail.
Red Dawn AK-47s are in here too. It's pretty awesome.
Wow, I guess those gun control laws really aren't going up too much if they're sending them out.
You can just send guns through FedEx now. Actually, considering the way Obama has lessened the gun restrictions, you probably can send them through FedEx at this point. But anyway.
Well, yeah, it's so funny being in the middle of, for the longest time, not to make the show go on, for the longest time I started Republican, and then I was like, well, I don't know what I'm siding yet. Now I just kind of sit back and I'm just like, whatever, and I listen, and it's hilarious, because what you just said, I hear Republicans saying the exact opposite thing, like
I know, it's crazy.
I was in a gun store, just real quick, everybody would love to hear this. I was in the gun store, and I was looking at this handgun I wanted to get, and a guy standing next to me, just guy standing around, was like, well, you better buy it soon, because you know who got it. This is right after the election. He's like, you know who got elected yesterday? I was like, I looked him dead in the eye. Now, I'm not a Democrat or Republican. I don't care either way. I looked him dead in the eye. I was like, yeah, the same guy that's been in office for the last 4 years.
He expanded gun rights. You can take guns on national parks now. You can do anything you want with guns. You can do far more now than you could 4 years ago. It's so stupid, but whatever. Whatever. Let's not get into the weeds of politics right now. Let's just.
I was trying to get done before the end of the show so I could show people to go, but I'm not trying to prove you wrong, guy, on the chat room. I really appreciate you listening and chiming in. Seriously, I do. But I just, I'm so sure about it. I'm photoshopping the goggles on Tom Hardy. Photoshopping the goggles on Tom Hardy. I'm halfway done. It looks amazing. I'll put it on the site shortly. So just check that out. Let me know what you think there. Thanks for listening. We're the Punch Drunk Critics. Check us out every single day on punchdrunkcritics.com. All your shopping needs for the holidays, electronics, movies, games, whatever. Especially Black Friday, Cyber Monday. Go to punchdrunkcritics.com. Click on shop at punchdrunkcritics.com and get all of your shopping done right there. Doesn't cost you a dime. Helps us out a little bit. On Twitter, I am at PunchDrunkJohn. Travis is at PunchyCritic. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, email us at punchdrunkcritics@yahoo.com or gmail.com. And don't forget to check out the interview with Phil Lamar right here on blogtalkradio.com/punchdrunkcritic. We will be back Sunday, and make sure to check us out every day until then. Are you taking a day off for Thanksgiving?
Am I what?
A day off, actually, for Thanksgiving?
Am I going to take a day off? Maybe not. probably not totally.
Yeah, so when you guys are in your turkey comas and done watching football, you can always check out the latest movie news even then. We'll see you guys later.
Later.
We came, we saw, we kicked its ass.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
I'm not great at farewell, so, that'll do, pig.
That's the worst goodbye I've ever heard. And you stole it from a movie.